Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, March 26th, 2004. Today's session is entitled Hospitality, the First Practice of the Lutheran Outdoor Ministry Association Retreat. Session number LOMA 2004-01. Let's listen in.
Our first sharing will be on the chapter on welcoming or hospitality, and just to know the format a little, I have been assigned for between 10 and 15 minutes for some reflections at the beginning, which will start in a minute. And then when I'm finished, if Tom or Margie have any response to that, and then Margie then is going to lead in conversation on the topic. And then who's responsible to end this?
End the prayer.
Okay, and then, decide when we're going to end it.
Margie's.
She's going to give us a little warning.
So you decide when to end it, and then you end it.
Yes.
Okay. one interesting thing, the latest Christian Century has a book review of Way to Live. I don't know if any of you saw this. And it's also at the same time reviews another book from Zondervan called Soul Shaper, and they have similarities as far as practice, emphasis on practices. And the reviewer is a 25-year veteran Presbyterian youth ministry person. Okay. So, and what's interesting about this, he started reflecting on ministry starting in the 70s. He said 70s when we started to think about and started using the word disciple, we are making disciples, and that's when he said we invented then a verb. That's when the verb discipling. And then a one who did discipling was a discipler. But then my mind started going back to before that and way back, and especially thinking about church camping, going back to my childhood. And I think there were three influences that were in the church that I grew up in. One was post-Reformation scholasticism, which meant the Christian life was mainly learning the doctrines and reciting the catechism. So that was scholasticism. And then there was pietism, and I figured out that mostly happened at church camp, where on Friday night before the last day on Saturday, there would be this campfire with the emotional evening of singing. By the way, the third then was legalism, and you did the doctrine at church, and then at church camp you sang songs like I Have Decided to Follow Jesus, No Turning Back, No Turning Back. Did you sing that?
Yeah.
You want to sing a duet?
That
was the cross before me, the world behind me. And I always remember the world behind me always brought the legalism part. That meant not dancing,
smoking, drinking,
yeah,
swearing,
drinking.
And then you'd always you'd sing. We Are Climbing Jacob's Ladder. I remember there was always one crabby pastor that tried to tell us this was doctrinally unsound. He was trying to bring the scholasticism thing into the Bible camp, right?
Yeah.
And then so we sang it anyway.
defiantly.
Every round goes higher, higher. It's so so that was probably youth ministry before, and I have one church camp joke, so I'll get that in right here. And this was the kid that went to camp for the first time, and when he got home, his friends asked him how he liked it. And he says, well, it was okay, except my mother forgot to sew my name on my underwear. And they said, well, what difference would that make at camp? And he says, well, would you want everybody calling you Fruit of the Loom? That's the only one I
don't
know. Are
there worse ones in that? But then he, back to the review, he carries it on from discipling through, and then says this, finally this, we move into the mid-90s. The weary of party and pizza-centered youth program, lots of us began searching for alternative models by the mid-90s. A number of books hinting at the power of spiritual practices, but with the arrival of Soul Shaper and Way to Live, the emphasis that had been bubbling beneath the surface became explicit. Solis, he feels this is a breakthrough of in ministry, and I think that would include ministry with adults and families in the church camp setting, is what is definition in the book of spiritual practices, the intentional commitment to specific ways to live the Christian life supported by a community. Those two things, commitment to a specific ways to live the Christian life, and then that supported and you're surrounded by a community. So I'm going to jump from that to the first one we are going to look at, and that is the spiritual practice of hospitality. And in this chapter, and by the way, the reviewer of this book is very positive about the book, but it's interesting, he does say some chapters are better than others. And if you want to know the weak chapters, you can read this. But he's basically positive about this. And one thing that it brings out in this chapter, and I think it's partly the teenager talking, because each chapter, I think you know, is written by a teenager in collaboration with an adult, which I think really makes the book interesting. And he compares the world is really one big high school lunchroom, and that is, when you think of the high school lunchroom, this is a time when it's hardest to be alone. And I remember when I was a junior in high school, our family moved to Southern California. I left the high school of kids I'd been with since kindergarten. And then it was the middle of the school year, not even the beginning. And I remember walking the first day when it got to be lunch. And all I saw out there were groups that were close together with no room. And I'll still remember that first day, the embarrassment of sitting all by myself eating my lunch, surrounded by all of these groups in a 6,000 student high school in Southern California. And that's a sense of what he calls chapter calls the whole world. People who have found each other all want to fit in, to be accepted. They have a deep longing to be home, at home, a place where we can be ourselves, a place at the table, and then find a group that they have everything in common with, and that group becomes closed out of this desire for home. And then it is open only when somebody is found who is safe, or will add to the prestige of our group. Then how all the way up to the whole world is the groups are rich and poor, black and white, denominations. We could go on and on. Then comparing it to a high school and how strong that is in high school, the realization that for high school students and adults, this is a practice that takes a tremendous amount of gifted spiritual maturity. This is a practice that needs community, but it needs a maturity, and if you follow faith development, it's the Mother Teresa's and the St. Francis's of the world who really saw what are the two great gifts that bring a spirit of hospitality, meaning opening up the circle and welcoming another in. And that the first is the gift of seeing every human being as a brother or a sister. Every human being as a brother or sister. And then in a deeper sense, from Matthew 25, to see every human being, including the lost, the lonely, the ones that we would say are out of, I don't know what word would be now, we used to say out of it, but to see Christ in these faces, the neglected ones, to see Christ in them, and the joy then of knowing that in the stranger we will meet Christ. Now, something happened in the early church. We know from reports that one of the gifts of the Holy Spirit to the earliest church was the opening up of the community, and especially reaching out and opening up to those who were most left out. I read in the book that you loaned me, I read how in the second century a report was written of helping widows, bringing in orphans who were in danger of being captured into slavery. Widows who were had no male relatives were completely vulnerable in society, bringing them in. And then also the report was that if someone had enough and someone had nothing, you would give away to that person to balance. And then the stranger, from the Old Testament custom, the stranger was one to be received as a brother or a sister. And then this was carried on in the monasteries. You know, if you're ever feeling lonely and nobody cares about you, just go to a Benedictine monastery, and you know they have to give you hospitality. It's in the order. Boy, and I have. You know, I remember these sisters in Lacey, Washington, where I went. Now, I want to close with this before our discussion is, there's two kinds of hospitality in the Gospels and in the New Testament, and also in the disciples and Jesus and the earliest Christian community. One was carried out by the settled members of families of welcoming the stranger. The other form of hospitality was practiced by those who were called the itinerants. And this would have been Jesus and the disciples. And this was a lecture once up here at Holden from Michael Pellett, who's a theologian scholar up in Canada, gave a lecture on the Jesus model of receiving hospitality instead of giving it. And to receive hospitality, one has to give up control. And Jesus decided never to have a center with a kitchen and a table to offer hospitality, but Jesus' life, going to the home of Zacchaeus, going to the home of the Pharisees to eat, going to the home of Mary and Martha, receiving the water from the woman at the well, and even on the cross receiving the bitter wine for his thirst. It was one of receiving hospitality as a way of honoring the host and giving the host, often a peasant, a poor peasant, giving that person the dignity of being the host and then being the gracious receiver. And I'll close my little part with just a little story of once how this happened accidentally to Karen, my wife, and me. And when I was in my first parish in the 60s, we were a suburb of Chicago, St. Charles, and had this idealistic program called Friendly Town. And Friendly Town was that we would bring children out from the inner cities, I think almost all black children, out from the inner cities for a weekend in St. Charles. And once Karen and I went into Chicago to pick up one of the children who lived in Cabrini Towers on the west side, if you're familiar. I think they've been torn down now, but at that time, one of the roughest and notorious places. So when we came around the corner of Cabrini Towers, and there's quite a large lawn in front before you got to the tower, and we were very relieved that the child was out on the street, so all we had to do was slow down, open the door, and he could jump in. So we slowed down, opened the door, and he said, my mother wants you to come up and visit. And then it was, yeah, so we followed him toward Cabrini Towers. And then before we got close to the building, he stopped us. He says, okay, now we look up. Okay, run. And that's because people throw things down, so the last part you run to the door. And then up, elevators were all broken, so it was up these dark stairwells with all the graffiti, urine smell, and up to one of the higher floors, down this dark hallway area, and then the door opened, and this green cinder block walls, the home had been made beautiful, and we looked in, and she welcomed us in, and there she had a little table set with a very cloth, linen tablecloth. And we sat down, and she served us the best sweet potato pie I have ever had. And as she served us as the host or the hostess, to look into her eyes and see, I think, to see the dignity that she felt in having us there in her home as a host. And it's a time that I have the picture of the ministry of Jesus. And this lecture closed with this, how can the church do both a ministry of welcome hospitality and also going out to lose power, lose control, and receive hospitality even from the lowliest? So that's my little introduction.
That's great. So,
I'm just thinking that the question that you just said might be something when Thomas finished that we could start our discussion with. Yeah. That's a great discussion. How do we both welcome and teach hospitality as well as receive hospitality from our guests and campers? Sit over here.
Whoa, thanks.
No, it's good to see you guys.
You know, I resonate with that because I lived in Cabrini Green in 67 and 68 and had the same kind of experiences. And then in 1971 and 72 was in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. Had the same kind of experience where in both situations I went in to those places thinking I was Mr. Hospitality. Mm-hmm. And in both experiences it was turned back on me. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about that as in terms of this question to see how that that relates for me. But it was in both, it was a matter of I came from where I was coming from in my life trying to do something to people. I was going to lay this on them. Mm-hmm. And the experience that you had instead of you doing this, opening the door and having the kid come in, now you were in their house and it was the hospitality was coming to you. And in the Philippines, it was the same way in terms of when I'd go into someone's nipa hut, things were beautiful, they were perfect. They took their best, that was it. They took their best and laid it out. If it was a can of beans or something that was the best that they could hardly afford, they'd put the best out in both situations.
Mark, do you want to leave to take it from there?
Tom, did you want to?
No, go ahead.
Thank you.
You said several things, Dan, that I think would be good for discussion with us. But let's think about, especially as we now are thinking about summer. When we did the introductions today, most of you were thinking about what's coming ahead of you for summer and staff training. Dan talked about the whole Benedictine order of seeing everyone as Christ. How does that fit for you as you think about preparing for summer and training staff? What are you doing to help and teach hospitality? Both areas of hospitality.
Just want to share a struggle. We teach it very well. I think we use the booklet you wrote way back, where you know, used to teach this class, and I'm always struggling with people, myself included, saying the right words, but not getting into the practice. You know what I mean? I could ask, I could give tests. We say the words, but it's so very difficult to just get over the hump and have it become part of who we are in terms of practice. So that's my struggle. Joys, frustrations, and concerns.
Dan, you said something early on about the two gifts necessary to do good hospitality, the natural gifts, and being able to see everyone as a brother or sister and see the face of Christ in them. And Ralph, your question kind of got me thinking about this. I know that not everyone is gifted that way from the get-go, but is there, and I know this works with some things, that if you practice it, if you do the discipline, that eventually you can learn to get there. Is this something that would speak to Ralph's question? If you do it right enough times, do you get it? You know what I mean?
I think you got to get behind that. To what I've learned from the Benedictines is you practice the presence of Christ in others, because then you begin, it starts to affect you. But I don't think you do it just for summer camp. I mean, you ought to be trying to, you ought to be working at it every day of your life, in every circumstance you're in. Because it'll be phony if you're setting it up just for certain circumstances. I mean, it seems to me that unless you're practicing it yourself, whatever you're trying to convey to your staff is going to come off as artificial or a learned experience. And so if they see you doing it, I remember I was up at the last place I ever went to help with staff training, you know, when I was on the national staff, was Acoustica. And I went up there, Bob Kwan was the director. And I was there a couple of days, and he had a great staff and a lot of lively discussion, and everybody seemed to know how to do Bible studies and all those things. And there was a guy named Paul up there, he ends up being an artist later on. I can't remember his last name right now. And the second day he pulled me aside and he said, you know, I just don't feel like I fit here. He said, they're so good with the Bible study, man, they know the verses and they know how to connect things. And he says, I just am not very good at that. And it just happened because I had my one eye open, I guess. I had seen him. He was the guy that was always helping clean the garbage cans, clean a toilet if it needed cleaning. He was just available. You know what I mean? And that gentleman says, you know, Paul, if I was going to have a kid at this camp, you'd be the counselor. I said, I don't really care a lot about the Bibles. I mean, I think they ought to be done, and you can do that. The way you live the way you're supposed to live. Now, every one of us have had people in our staffs like that. And it seems to me to find that, to see those people, and to say, you're right, Dave, some have special gifts of reaching out, seeing people as a Christ. But you ought to support them and tell them they're kind of the undercover people for you at the camp to make sure this begins to happen on a broad scale. That was helpful for me, but I think until you get a hold of the idea at the Benedictines that the practice is, and you're going to blow it up. I mean, we're always blowing it all the time. I mean, you know, if I were to talk about how I feel about some of our political leaders, you would not see a lot of. See, but I've got to look for the Christ in them too. I've got to look for the Christ in everybody. And that's an impossible assignment on a human level.
May I just add something to that? I think the emphasis of this book, like for a youth group, and that could is the emphasis on community. And I kind of took that in my mind to where that could move, and had this imagination to picture a group, and this could be staff at camp. When practices become very intentional, then what you do, you go out and try to do them, and then you come back and report to the community, and I really failed on this one, or here was a good. And I like to tell people, you know, church actually could be fun. You know, when you come back and you say, boy, did I blow this one. But you're actually specifically working on even just one of these practices. And, yeah. Marty and I were just talking, and I said, my hardest one is love fundamentalists. To see Christ and to see Christ in them. But then you could have the community and say, I met one and I
love them.
I love them. just this little love with bubblegum.
Wasn't it easy?
Yes.
Janet, you one of the things I've learned in the years I've been here, and maybe everybody knows this, but I have to keep relearning it, is that when I'm ready to receive the gift from them, that's what is hospitality. For example, we have for 10, 15 years invited a gospel choir from Seattle to come up. We think we're doing them a great deal because they get to come up to the mountains and they get to come free. But what they're doing is they're giving us that gift of music.
Yeah.
And the same has happened with our Abriendo week, our Spanish-speaking week, first week. You know, they just want to jump in and make tortillas and pitch in and tamales and do things for us out of gratitude for being here. I mean, it's a give and take kind of thing. It's not like we're just giving to you. We also have some groups come in who are economically challenged people, and they don't have to do anything when they're here, but often some, well, one's a homeless women's choir in Seattle, which Diane's daughter is the director of, and they want to do a forum for us. They want to teach us and sing with us and for us. And I don't know, it's just, if I remember that they want to give their gift, and if I let them find a way, if I find a way for them to give a gift, it's that back and forth. I'm also thinking of the servant song as we're talking here now. Let me be your servant and give me the grace to let you be my servant too. That's one of my favorite things.
Martin.
Go ahead, you were going to start a question.
One of the things that this is to sidetrack from training and what we do at camps. One of the things that jogged my thought is you talked about two kinds of hospitality, and it's something that I struggle with in our ministry and have for many, many years, and that's the concept of servant events, kind of buzzwords we've done in our ministries, and we've accepted groups and sent groups and I think that concept, from my perspective, needs some work on the second half of what you talked about. I mean, I wanted to start groups in Montana and have high school or junior high or adult groups come either from out of state or within state. And it would be essentially meet our neighbors. We could think of a better title than that. But one day we'd go visit a Hutterite colony. One day we'd go visit a Amish colony. One day we'd go to one of the churches of the reservation, and we'd hear a Christian drumming group. One day, and we'd go to a powwow. It would be, how does our faith interact with our neighbors? And but we get the phone calls like all of you do. We want to come and do a servant event, and we are somehow going to bring our hospitality to you. And I have a struggle with this whole thing. I just want to throw that out. I don't have an answer, but I just am now with this new second half of hospitality. I want to put that. We don't do many serving events other than people coming and.
John, are we doing many of those trainings now in the whole action reflection model of what it means? Because we really had to struggle with that, that it wasn't, look at how good we're doing. And
yeah, we do them every other year because of funding. But what I am hearing from people who do servant events or service learning events, whatever you call them, is that it still comes down to the relationship. That oftentimes the building and the painting and all that stuff, by the end of the week, you realize it doesn't matter. It's the community of the group and wherever you go. And we started to really try to focus on that too. You know, don't just go paint somewhere, but if you're going to go to a reservation, interact with the people. And the servant event or the service is more than just the action of painting, but it is being present with those people and being able to have an exchange. And that's what hospitality is too.
I think the images that I use a lot for that I saw is of Martha and Mary. And I saw a painting once that showed Martha and Mary around the figure of Christ, and Martha was over the shoulder of Christ serving food, and Mary's arms were in balance with Martha's, you know, as she was looking at Christ in conversation. And the word that I really value and want to think a lot more is this word about maturity, because I think one of the struggles for us, whether it's in training or just personally, is that the Martha side is easier. You know, all of our staff, I don't think I could see a moment where thoughtfulness wasn't involved in the food or answering a question, carpentry or whatever. It's much harder to motivate staff to sit down and talk with guests. And we actually have a silly meeting every spring where we do conversation topics in order to avoid where are you from, how long are you here, what is your position. I mean, the staff just gone up, you know, because they hate answering the question over and over and over. But that's the starting point for conversation. And I hate it when I don't think you can guilt trip people into saying, you know, it's really about mutuality and exchange. And so that's where my struggle is to invite people to be in balance with Martha and Mary, the doing for and the being with. I think how to coach it to the being with is partially from modeling, but I think it's much more difficult. And it's very difficult to sustain in the heat of being tired and lots of things to do.
Going back to what Ralph was saying about the practice, you know, we do the words, we do the trainings, and the sustaining it. What are some of the practices? I mean, how do we get this, how do we ingrain this? How do we teach it? How do we all know the culture. We've all been to camps, places where we have not felt very welcome, where it's not been a hospitable place, and then others where it's been extremely hospitable. Is that because of the, you know, modeling you were talking about, someone, that it has to be part of? Is that the leader's role, Jerry, that you mentioned, that they model what you're doing? Or why is it, and you've talked about Kirkland, a place that's very well known, and I've been there too, and it was not a welcoming place.
Yeah, when I did my sabbatical many years ago, Lindy and I did a one-month trip looking at centers, and because I wanted to learn about centers. And so we had a motorhome and drove around the country. And one of the places we came to was Kirkridge. And John Oliver Nelson was a hero of mine. And Robert Raines was at Kirkridge, and boy, I was excited about going to Kirkridge. I mean, this is really going to be something that I'll actually be at Kirkridge. And we got there, and first of all, we couldn't find any, there were no signs that told us how to get into the parking area. We finally got into the parking area, but it was a little ravine between the parking area and the hospitality center. And so I'm standing on one side of the ravine. Is anybody over there? Finally, somebody came out. What? I says, is that Kirkridge? Yeah. Is there any way to get over there so we can visit? Yeah, you go around this. We're yelling. I turned around to Linda and I said, well, so much for hospitality. Nobody came and said, oh, come on and show you how to get over there. Oh, you know. It was just funny because we had all these high expectations. And we went to two or three other centers, other world famous names, and walked into it, and it was like, what are you doing here? Who are you? You know, we didn't know you were coming. I'd sent letters ahead of time. We'd done the whole nine yards. And they didn't want people there unless they were on their terms and at their agenda. And It was a great learning experience for me because I remember I came back and some of you people were on in camping at that time, and I really keyed off on this whole hospitality choice. So I remember walking into the ELCA camp and treated that way, there's going to be smoke flying. But that was probably a wrong, bad approach on my part. I should have been more gentle about it. But I just felt so, I felt used.
Yeah. I've always dreamed of going to Kirkridge.
Don't be. Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, some of these names are famous.
Big names.
Well, anyway, I think sometimes every one of us ought to go to different places that we're not known to see how we're treated. You learn a lot about how you want to be treated. And I tell you, there are hotels that I've gone to that had better hospitality statements in their rooms than I've ever seen in most of the camps of our church. I mean, they really think through what they believe and how they want to treat guests. And of course, that's what we're in the business of, treating everybody as Christ.
We stayed in a hotel in Portland.
Yeah.
At the airport, and it was a Hampton Inn, and I have to tell you, You were much more than a guest.
You could
be part of the family there.
Oh yeah, you couldn't move in that hotel without them. Is there anything we can do? You need a ride any place? We'd be glad to take you wherever you want. I mean, it was just. I mean, we were there 4 days.
Drinks.
So it's not.
You know, when I was reading the book about the imagery of the cafeteria. Mm-hmm. I mean, it reminded me of I went to an ACA Northland section meeting, and a fellow was introduced a term, strife guard, to have someone be a strife guard, like a lifeguard, but on land. And the concept was that in staff training, when you have staff come, there's always somebody that's struggling because they're not connecting. They don't know anybody. They're a little bit quieter than everyone else. They think everybody else knows the Bible better.
Yeah.
And same goes with campers. As they arrive on camp, you could probably pick out quickly at the first meal who might kind of sit at the end of the table and have three chairs between them and everyone else in the cabin. And his suggestion was that you actually assign somebody as strife guard for that day, and their only job is to seek out and welcome and befriend those that are struggling. And I just love that concept.
Yeah, it's a nice one.
So that's maybe an intentional way of not just, I mean, the modeling it obviously, but also signing to ensure that people don't fall through the cracks in the welcoming and the hospitality.
Did you do that,
Joel? Well, I just heard it.
Oh, okay.
This was in March.
Oh, okay.
February at a meeting. So.
Are you going to?
Yeah, we will. It really makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think part of the practice, listening to all sorts of different people, putting together, they don't want you there unless you're there on their agenda. And the cafeteria imagery of the closed systems that only allow the new person in who's either going to improve their status or fit exactly right, has this underlying societal theme of control, where we are very much taught in our culture that you need to be in control of the situation at all times.
Right.
And the person who's out of control is an outcast. They're insane, or they're different, or they're odd. And receiving hospitality, I love this talk about receiving hospitality as I think is a good way of practicing the not being in control, which makes you then more able to give hospitality without expectations of how that person should respond to it, what they should give back in return. I grew up with a grandmother who was incredibly good at the talk part. I mean, she was the hostess with the mostest, and everything was always perfect, the house looked beautiful and everything, but if you didn't care to receive what she was giving, you might as well just go home, because you could feel really bad for a while. And she did it out of a kindness and out of a desire to be a wonderful host to people and to make them feel welcome and everything, but it was so extravagant to the point of, no, I'm really full, or I'm fine. There was sort of a thing associated to that. And so I think as we learn to accept hospitality, we'll probably get better at giving it. And I want to just share for a second. I had the privilege of working with a wonderful 7th through 12th grade choir. And we were offered by her brokering, who was a member of the congregation, to go with him on a trip led in Eastern Europe. He's done this many, many times, and he knows a lot of people, and you go into kind of unusual places, you don't go to the regular kitschy places. And the big part of it was you meet people and you stay in their homes. And the kids decided they didn't want to go because we don't speak their language and it makes us uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I had gone the year before with her to kind of prepare the way for this trip to happen, and have a picture on my window of this wonderful young woman who I could speak about 5 words in every paragraph we figured out from each other what we were saying. And we've developed a friendship that's lasted 4 years. And these kids threw away the opportunity to meet wonderful new people and to receive hospitality from them, because they wouldn't be able to control the conversation and give what they wanted to give in the way that they wanted to give it, and have it be received in the way they wanted it to be received. And so this, I think the accepting is the big part of the practice that maybe is good for all of us.
Well, there's two things that come to my mind. One is our congregations, hospitable, friendly. Most aren't. That I've experienced for all kinds of reasons, size or where they're located. And the other thought is for mentioning staff. Our staff are college age students, and they're not coming from a real hospitable environment, because they're coming from an environment that is a survival mentality.
Competition.
I've got to do, competition. So then we get them in the summertime, and the best thing that we can do is to do whatever possible to get them back into, if they left, back into the framework of servant and being Christ-like. Challenge.
I had an experience in a congregation once that I was by myself there visiting. I was in a kind of a snarly mood, so I stood in the middle of the narthex facing everyone as I came out, and everybody walked around me. And finally, this man walked up and he smiled on his face and he reached out his hand, and then all of a sudden he looked and he says, "Oh my God, I thought you were somebody else." This is a great day.
The angels sang.
I had a similar experience right after I left the parish and moved to a new community, and we were visiting some of the different churches around the area. And my wife and I were just talking about this not too long ago, and that's been 15, 20 years now. We came to the door, came up to the door, and the narthex was full of people. They were talking like crazy. We opened the door, and it's like it fell silent. And both of us described it as like the parting of the Red Sea, where they all stepped back, and we had a trail to get to the usher to receive a bulletin. Nobody said a word to us the whole morning. It was the only church, however, that the pastor came and visited us after we'd been to the worship. And it's one of those experiences that coming right from the parish as the pastor, it's starting to visit churches trying to find a new church home where I wasn't going to be a pastor. It's just an amazing experience.
You're probably a tiger.
They were hoping.
And they didn't know what they were.
Eli.
Please.
I don't know if this is a Midwestern thing or not, but I remember a real simple lesson that I learned in high school from my band director. And I can't remember exactly what it was that we had done, but it must have been good because he thanked us. And with typical false modesty, we said, wasn't anything. Don't worry about it. And he stopped us right there and he said, wait a minute. I just gave you a compliment. You need to say thank you. And we said, what are you talking about? He said, in effect, when you said, nah, that's nothing. What you told me was that my gratitude to you wasn't worth anything. And I had never thought about it that way before. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is also a Midwestern thing or not, too, but have you ever noticed if you go to a place of business and they thank you, I didn't used to say, you're welcome. I said thank you back to them, like I had to get the last word in. Like I had to one up their thanks for me being, you know, a shopper at their place. And I hadn't thought about it in that way before, but it's almost like we can't, you know, it's probably a humility thing. And somehow not being able to lower ourselves to the point of honoring their gratitude. You know, we've got to somehow put ourselves up higher, and you know, I think we do it innocently, but it's wrong. You know, that's a funny little example, but I think oftentimes that's exactly how we build what we should be doing. Is, you know, starting with simple things like that. I purposely stop myself now when someone says thank you to me. Mm-hmm. I try to say you're welcome, rather than thank you back to them. And it's work for me. It's work for me. But that's what I was getting at earlier when I said, if we practice the whatever, what's the word? The doing of it, do we eventually get it?
Mm-hmm. Kenan Callahan in his book on stewardship talks about how we never be able to give until we've learned to receive.
There's a book called Mudhouse Sabbath, and the author describes hospitality or explains it in the context of the creation story about how God created all of these wonderful things for us. But then God didn't give us the rhinoceros and say, well, here's a rhinoceros, go have fun. He said, here's this animal, what do you want to call it? And he invited us to be a part of the hospitality that he was giving. And I did that last summer during staff training. It was about 15 minutes before one of our meals, about halfway through staff training, and I said, I just stopped right in the middle of one of our sessions, and I said, I have three board members coming for supper. Look around. What do you think we need to do in order for us to be ready to serve them a meal? And I said, ready, set, go. And they did everything to prepare for these three people who were coming. And then after the meal, after the board members left, I thanked them. And specifically identified the things that they had done And that was last summer. It was the first summer where I could really see a... we talk about a Midwest thing. I'm not quite sure. Hospitality is a hard thing for folks out here on the West Coast to comprehend. And that was that moment during staff training had a real effect, I think, on the hospitality that our staff gave last summer by inviting them to be a part of the process.
Were the board members aware that anything had been done?
I set up the situation. I invited them.
Okay.
So I knew they were coming.
I wanted to get back to what Gary had said about the kind of that uncomfortableness with servant programs, and it brought me back to remember what I think Pathways is still doing at Camp Emmaus, and taking the younger kids into a nursing home in the middle of the camp week, going into town and sharing songs, and I think it's kind of the best of a servant event, in that the kids, I think, initially go thinking that they're giving something to the people at the nursing home, but the people applaud and they tell them later, oh, you know, this was the best thing of our week, and the kids go away so blessed to be able to share, and it totally confuses, you know, who's welcoming who, and by the time they leave, I think the kids are just totally dizzy as to what exactly happened here. We came expecting to be a blessing, and we got blessed. My wife further confused something just last week. She did a piano recital and took it to a nursing home, and the kids were it was just totally, when they came away, that they were so blessed from just being able to share something that they thought was pretty ugly. You know, their simple efforts at trying to learn music, but they were such a blessing. But they were much more blessed. I think serving events need to somehow be a real conglomeration of welcoming from both ends somehow.
I'd like to back up if I could. When we were talking about hospitality as giving and receiving, for years, I've been working with the Black community in Atlanta and trying to get kids to come to camp through very good intentions. And Bob and I were just part of a conference. And I learned two things there. One is, we're not gonna try to get kids to come to camp. We're gonna go into congregations and get to know the members and the pastors and find out if there's a connection between us. And the second thing, I found two coaches, two peers that are going to kind of that I'm developing a trust with, and they're going to and they're starting to be honest with me, and I'm learning, and that feels much more as back and forth rather than me have something that I want to deposit so I can up my statistics in serving people of color. So that was a good learning experience. And the second thing is, when I was in California with the Hispanic community, I had an adopted son from Guatemala, and they kind of adopted him. And as a result, we had a friendship and a partnership, and they'd have quarterly retreats at one of our camps. But whenever they would come, they would bring food, and they would bring other things that they would leave with us. So it wasn't just us taking. And then we'd go into those congregations in the city and do urban programs, and they'd be our host and hostess, and they put up people in the homes. So that was really a back and forth partnership, a giving and a receiving, and made all the difference. So you'd think you'd learn and then go to a new place and start over and do it wrong.
I remember that in Ohio, I kept going to the inner city congregations and trying to get them to come to, which were pretty rustic camps, and finally one pastor just nailed me and said, why would we do that? That's how our people live all the time. And we ended up doing camp at a really nice Ramada Inn in downtown Columbus. We're still doing it because that was something different. So we have to, the best
that coming from Liberia? You felt?
Yeah, it's really hard to say anything without thinking about the last 2 weeks where I received an incredible amount of hospitality in one of the poorest countries of the world. But it made me think about whether a commitment to hospitality might mean, I don't want to say neglecting, but lessening some other priorities in our own lives. I mean, I experience all this hospitality, and you see this in Liberia all over, is that people really sort of have a natural sort of desire to help others out and to be very hospitable. But on the other hand, they don't really get very much done beside that because they're so committed to hospitality. I mean, in terms of how we would look at, meetings don't start on time and things don't get, planning doesn't get done. But there is a real ministry of hanging out with each other for long periods of time. And I'm wondering, would I be able to give up my need to get things done in order to sit with someone for 3 hours? Or do we really have the concept of time at our retreat centers and camps in order to have hospitality? I mean, could meals be an hour and a half long rather than 20 minutes? Or would we be willing to sacrifice our schedules for the sake of connecting with one another? I was just really struck by some of the things that doing hospitality means you can't do because you're really paying attention to the needs of others and you have an inability almost to say no to them. I experienced that kind of thing.
That makes me think of somebody who'd been in Africa, and I can't for the life of me think of who it was or which country we were in, but was talking at something. I can't remember any of the details, but what struck me was they were talking about how slowly the people they ran into in Africa walked. People walk slowly. And there's some kind of proverb of wisdom or something that when you walk slowly, you can be more present with the people around you. And I've discovered that this is one of those little things that I need to work on for hospitality. I'm a fast walker, very fast walker. And I walk fast because I always have to get to the next place to do the next thing. And so I've discovered, especially here, where you're running into people all the time, if I keep walking fast, I'm walking right past all the people I'm supposed to be connecting with, just so I can get to my next meeting or whatever. And the other day, I was running up to Janet's house for a meeting, and I was already kind of late. And so I was walking fast, and this guest was on the ARC, and she said, where are you headed to? And I said, I'm late, I've got a meeting, I'm already 15 minutes late, I gotta go. And she said, you don't look like a white rabbit. And I thought, how are you today? And she didn't really care to talk to me, she was just really seeing where I was going, but it was a wonderful little reminder too. So if anybody's looking for a place to start, I highly recommend looking at how fast you walk.
We have staff person, I think it was my first summer here, maybe my second summer, who at the point of the summer where a lot of our staff are kind of missing the intimacy of having easy conversations with other people, this was a young person who decided on periodically they just put a bucket out in the middle of the main traffic here between the hotel and Koinonia, and they sat down on the bucket in the middle of the road, and they had this discipline of sitting out there for a certain amount of time and just chatting up with anybody that came around or went by, like white rabbits or otherwise.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just, I loved that kind of image. I know in The Little Prince, I've always loved that phrase from that book about it's the time that you waste on your worries that makes all the difference. Mm-hmm. And how the sort of the real test of friendship is those people that waste time with you. You know, I mean, that waste time is already a telling phrase about our culture, but it does have to do with the gift of time. Aloha, I appreciate you saying that.
I would add to the walking fast, watch how fast you talk. Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. It's very efficient to talk quickly, but we're not computers. And we forget that sometimes, I think.
I'm just, always struck, just going to the mall, which I hate doing, the number of people now that are walking together, having conversations with somebody on their cell phone, and ignoring the people they're walking with. Mm-hmm. And it's becoming so clear what a bad influence cell phones are in our culture, with the not being with the people you're near.
You never have to be where you are.
No.
And a lot of people, you never have to be where you are. And a lot of people really like you. They don't want to be.
It's driving me. It's radio. Yeah. One end, so.
That's, go ahead, Derek.
I'm a deficit disorder.
I'm going back in my thoughts to, I'm thinking ahead to the summer, I'm thinking back to your thought of how do we do or practice or create or foster this hospitality at camp. And I'm trying to split out hospitality with guests that come, like a lost Jerry across a hill. Guests that, well, you weren't lost, they were lost. But the guests that come, adults, what about hospitality with the other aspect is within our own staff, welcoming the opening of the high school circle, but the other is the hospitality with the people we work with, and we're primarily children. We don't do a lot with adults. We're not a conference center. And I go back, what I just started forming my mind was going back to the story of Jesus and the towel and the disciples' feet, and that was service, but that was hospitality, mm-hmm, too. And I've often thought, how would it be different if Jesus had lived longer after that experience with that towel? And how would their relationship be different? And that's where somebody said it starts with the people who are the leaders. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think of that too, and I think, any of us, the disciples or us who've been part of a foot wash, it's a symbol and we remember it. And one of you, I think Ralph, Eli, talked about we do the words, but how do we do the practice? And, we assume kids do not know how to set a table, right? So we teach them, or that's part of what we do, so they know how to put the fork and knife. I think we often assume too much that staff understand even basic manners, and part of that is hospitality, that we forget to teach and show, use our words. And I think of going to places, just happened recently, where the staff ran to the front of the line first, mm-hmm, in the food line. And I just, when do we tell people that? How do we teach? We have to. We can't assume that they know that. Or just not sitting together all the time at meals. And we start out the summer or start out the retreat season, and then we forget to assign staff member to the group of confirmation pastors or a group of pastors and say, you're secretly their counselor this week. You're going to check on them all the time and see how they're doing. All those old practices. I just think we assume too much. And I see, as I've done staff trainings the last few years and then gone back to camps now with family camping, to me it's almost like the staff are more clingy to each other, and maybe it's my age, but I'm wondering if it's maybe they don't have a sense of community in their homes or congregations or campus ministry or where they're coming from, or no sense of community anywhere, and so they're more attracted to each other, and it's harder for them to remember that every camper and every guest is a part of the community, to be always opening that circle.
Yeah, that's the paradox. In staff training, one of the great things we do is create community. One of the worst things we do is create community.
That's right.
No, it's true.
The circle's always open. There's always the the empty chair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's have one more comment, and then Jerry, would you close us, Rob? And then we can stay and visit. Are you?
Well, maybe it is appropriate then, because I started by saying, you know, we know the words and it's so hard to make it practice, but there's another side that I've often reflected on, and some of the most hospitable communities I've ever seen have been around camps. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, it's like the both and mm-hmm. You think back over all the evaluations that you receive from program leaders or youth directors or pastors, and much of the most positive ones are these conversations about the inclusion of people and how one kid who was outside the circle is part of the whole. So there is something that is powerful in the work we do that gives us hope, I think. And sometimes I wonder if, I think you're like me, we look at our staff as, you know, they're not just the workers, they're also people there who are receiving, on the receiving end. And I think it was in Acts where that old word koinonia is the result only of worship and service. It's not worship, service, and fellowship. It's that it only comes because the people worship and serve. And then community is a gift of the Spirit.
Surprise.
You know, surprise. Yeah. And I think that maybe that's what we can grab onto, you know, as what can we do to make community? Well, we...